Welcome to the Church of Mavis radio show. It's Friday night, 8:12 p.m. Eastern. You're listening to United Public Radio, 107.7 FM, New Orleans. Let me see, a couple of things to plug. 30th Ozark Mountain UFO Conference, ozarkufoconference.com, April 14th through the 16th. Let me see, Agent T is Kratom, and that Agent T is used by people all over for everything from pain relief to anxiety to sleep or to get energy. It's 100% organic. Product has not been evaluated by the FDA, not intended to cure or diagnose any disease or illness. Go to AsianTisKratom.com. That's Asian, A-S-I-A-N-T, is Kratom.com. Life is Better on Taunton Bay, and that's the site. You can check it out. They get good deals there. Let me see. I got one book to plug. The Empire's Ghost by Isabel Steiger. St. Martin's Press, Thomas Dunn Books. An epic fantasy. The Empire's Ghost weaves together the lives of the haves and the have-nots, both desperately fighting to reassemble the remains of a falling empire. Check it out. We got Jay here with us tonight.
Hi, how are you?
Terrible. No, I'm pretty good. I'm all right.
Yeah, spirit.
But for no matter what I do, it's like I feel sleepy. It's like I'm coffee, you name it, and it's like I can't. It's like a haze over me. I need to drink more coffee, apparently.
But, I don't know how you feel. I just straight in a row working.
And this weather just makes you want to sleep. It's cold in Florida. It's been cold in Florida. Well, it's warm during the day, but cold at night. And it's been in the 20s here, 30s, so I always see these memes trying to make it like Florida's 80 degrees all the time. No, it isn't. It's been in the 20s here. So, no, it's just 80 all the time. It gets cold here. Especially in the panhandle where I'm at, it gets cold. It's getting cold tonight. Not as cold as it's been, but pretty cold. Next week, Saul Luckman, DNA. Then we got a show about Medicine Man Rolling Thunder at the end of the month. Let me see, Saul Luckman, Medicine Man Rolling Thunder. For real. And I'm not going to read all the guests that did that last show. You got Gabby Fleck in the chat room tonight. Gabby Fleck, my number one fan, Gabby Fleck. Shout out to Gabby Fleck. Well, tonight's guest, Judica, Isles. I'm already messing it up. So how you doing, Judica?
I'm fine. It's colder here in New Jersey.
I bet. I'm sure it is. Say your last name. Illis.
Rhymes with Phyllis.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter. Everybody calls me whatever they call me, and I never correct anybody. Because it's a Hungarian name, and that's not even how it's pronounced, so it doesn't. I say my name wrong, so it doesn't make any difference.
I'm very easy to confuse.
Well, in Hungarian, it's Elish. So, you know, you'll never get that.
No. Your book, The Wiser Book of the Fantastic and Forgotten, Tales of the Supernatural, Strange and Bizarre, edited and introduced by you, of course. Enjoyed your book and
thank you.
All the authors in it, and discovered some new ones as well. So, what got you? Well, first off, give us a little bit of background about yourself for everybody.
Well, this book is really a departure for me because I write my own fiction, but my published work is mostly nonfiction. I have been studying, you know, witchcraft and the magical arts and the paranormal and, you know, esoterica really all my life, you know, since I could. whether through reading or through other people, my family, whoever. So that is how I came to this, and I have a number of books that are nonfiction books. I have four large encyclopedias that were published by HarperCollins, the Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells, the Encyclopedia of Witchcraft, Encyclopedia of Spirits, and Encyclopedia of Mystics, Saints, and Sages. And then I have some smaller books also that have been published with Wiser Books. And so that is what most people know me for. It's nonfiction. But I love to read, and I love esoteric fiction, you know, stories and books that take, you know, I don't really like the word supernatural or paranormal, because I think it's all normal. You know, I think it's all natural and it's all normal, but we don't have another word for it. So, I love that kind of fiction where it just accepts it as fact. It accepts it as normal. And I was given the opportunity to edit the series of stories, and I believe the book I'm already working on the next one. So I have, there will be a new book out in October, and so I already have the new book in my head. But I believe this one, Fantastic and Forgotten, has 18 stories by masters of this esoteric weird fiction, from Lovecraft to Algernon Blackwood to Dion Fortune. And I just loved it. I was very grateful for the opportunity to put it together, because, you know, I had the opportunity to put some of my favorite stories in there.
One thing I've always wondered with compilation type books, do you have to go to every author's like family and get permission, or some of it just like
free? No. Money? Well, yeah, yes and no. It depends. I mean, you know, here's you will see that a lot of these compilations, they don't have any stories that are later than 1923, because that is when, in the United States, when works fall into the public domain, and you no longer have to do that. So it is easier, it is less expensive, and easier to produce books like that. If you go into a bookstore and you look at the collections of short fiction, you're going to see a lot of the same authors, Lovecraft. But I'm very aware. I buy books, and I'm aware that people spend their hard-earned money on books, and so I tried very hard to not put the same 10 stories in that you're going to find in every other book, because yeah. People who are familiar with publishing will right away realize, you know, they're all public domain stories. Hypothetically, you know, you could read them elsewhere. They're just, some of these stories are hard to find.
Definitely. I'm not familiar with much of the copyright stuff, but I was always wondering, you know, what you had to go through to do all that.
If it's published after 1924, yes, then you would have to find out who is the copyright holder and get permission and pay for permission.
I noticed you mentioned Nick Pizzolatto. Last names are mutilating me tonight. Let me tell you. Nick Pizzolatto.
Right.
That's the guy that did True Detective, right?
Yes, yes. And there is a story. I was thinking very much about True Detective, because True Detective Season 1, a lot of the mythology of that series comes from The King in Yellow, which is a story that is in Fantastic and Forgotten. You know, the whole mythos of Carcosa.
Definitely.
I love that. I've always loved those stories. I love that series.
After seeing the first season of True Detective, I bought that King in Yellow book. It's pretty
yeah.
weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm only familiar with this with Nick through that show. What else has he done? Has he wrote other books?
He actually has, I think, a number of his own fiction. But I was very much thinking of that series when I mentioned him, because of that connection with True Detective. Because I was familiar, for those people who were familiar, with Carcosa and the King in Yellow before they started watching, you know, it really resonated because you know, as soon as they started going in that direction, that had such a tremendous resonance. So I love that whole season one. I just thought it was perfect. And
Yeah, it was beautiful, and season two was a... Yeah, I like two, too.
I mean, I like two as well, but I thought one was just, you know, I appreciated the writing and the way, you know, the way it was shot, the whole thing. There was, like, nothing you could really cut out of there. It was perfect.
Darkly beautiful. I actually did a little research on that story that's based around because I saw a documentary on the by the Vice Channel and about it. That's some sick old stuff, buddy. Just the real details of it is terrible.
Yeah.
Horrific.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. It's hard to read.
That underside. I also, I mean, for people who haven't read it, The premise of The King in Yellow, it's a series of stories by Robert Chambers, and what connects them is this, there is a play, there is a book that you never actually read, but that if people read it, they go mad. They go, you know, the power of the words to send the reader around the bend. And the story that is in Fantastic and Forgotten, that particular story takes place in New York City, which is where I'm from. And I know exactly where, you know, all the action in the story takes place. And it's a time-traveling story. You know, it was written before 1923, but it takes place in the future. And it's a frightening future. And it's just, I always enjoy things where I know, like, landscape-wise. I'm sure a True Detective also, if you know that area, just watching it and knowing exactly where everything takes place, it's very profound.
Yeah, Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey nailed that. That's
mm-hmm.
That was amazing acting for sure with True Detective.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought they were all great.
I just got Neil Gaiman's Norse book today where he redid it. I haven't read it. I just got it.
Yeah, me too. I just started reading it.
What do you think about it so far?
I like it. I like mythology and I like Neil Gaiman, so I was interested to see what he would do with it.
Pretty big thing to tackle. I didn't know how he was going to go about it. I don't even know now how he went about it. I guess comedic, some comedy, or how would you sum it up? How did he tackle it, so to speak? What did he change in it?
I don't know that he really changed anything. It's a pretty... I haven't finished it, so, you know, this may be too soon for me to speak. It's a pretty warm and... It's a pretty warm retelling. You know, it's very accessible. I think for people who are not familiar with Norse mythology, it's a good intro.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to dive into it. I love Norse mythology, and lately, for some reason, I've been studying it more crazily in Norse shamanism books and you name it.
In my day job, I am an editor for Wiser Books, which is, you know, one of the reasons I had the opportunity to put this compilation together, but I have among the books I've been editing is I'm working on Diana Paxson's book, which will be out in the fall. And for those who are, you know, it's too soon to say too much about it, but it's really a masterpiece. And Diana Paxson wrote Taking Up the Runes and is a channel for Odin and is just absolutely, absolutely brilliant. And the book is really, it's a masterpiece.
That sounds very exciting.
Yeah.
I got my DNA done, and it was 86% Great Britain on Ancestry.com and 10% Irish and then some other stuff. But it brought in the whole Viking situation.
Yeah.
And then my mother got hers done, and she had 10% Scandinavian. So it's in my blood.
Yeah.
And then also, of course, the Viking show kind of did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too. That was pretty good.
I'm looking forward to American Gods. which will be out in April.
That's going to be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. They have Ian McShane as Mr. Wednesday, and I just think that's brilliant casting.
I have that book. I haven't read it yet, but I know the show's coming. Brian Fuller's involved completely still, right?
Brian Fuller,
I know, is involved heavily with that. And he did Hannibal recently, that reboot of the show Hannibal that was excellent.
The book is good, American Gods. The book is, I mean, for people who, you know, I have a big book, Encyclopedia of Spirits, which is a big anthology, an encyclopedia of sacred beings from around the world. And so, I mean, it's a subject that's close to my heart, but Anansi Boys and American Gods, which can be read together, you know, there's some overlap of characters, although not, you know, they're both independent novels. And for people who enjoy spiritual beings, those are two great books.
I just found Diana on Amazon. I'm checking that out for sure, and keep an eye out for that coming up, no doubt about it. Well, let me see here. Let me get back to my keywords. I stumbled off. Oh, what's going on tonight with everything as far as the lunar eclipse?
Oh, my God. I have been so spacey. You know, and I'm a Cancer, so I'm a child of the moon. So the full moon, I am just super, super spacey. We have full moon. There is a lunar eclipse. And there is a comet, and I don't know. It's just, and they're all at the same time, and I don't know. You know, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what transpires in the next 24 hours, 48 hours. I always pay attention. You know, when Mercury goes retrograde, when you have any sort of phenomena, I pay attention to the news. I pay attention and see what's going on. Like, it's very interesting if you see when Mercury goes retrograde, take a look and see what happens, and then see where that thing is 6 months or a year later. You know, did it work out? I don't have anything in the room with me. I don't have my calendar here. But this phenomenon it's very unusual. These three things all at the same time. What will it mean? We're going to find out.
I hope it's something positive because I'm still psychologically recovering from the election.
Well, I hope so, too. Traditionally speaking, and it's not, modern astrology is much calmer about these things, but traditional astrology, you know, comets tend to be either signs of a new leader or signs that an old leader is on his or her way out, and eclipses also, you know. I don't know. I think it's a momentous day, and we will see. We will see what happens.
What is the moon in tonight? Do you know the full moon? What sign is it in tonight?
Is it Leo?
You know? I think so.
I think so, but I don't know.
I read it earlier, but...
I spent the day working on manuscripts. I think Leo, but I'm not 100% sure.
I think that's what I read earlier in my horoscope. Well, one of my I wrote a lot of books that were originally I had been doing written interviews with people on Examiner when I was with Examiner, and I did so many that I had talked about writing a book for like 10 years or more, and the whole time I was doing these written interviews with people on Florida Examiner. I don't work there anymore, but I had all the written interviews, and I came across a friend of mine, Andrew Colvin. He has New Saucerian Books. He went through them and edited them. God bless him for having to go through that with me, and it turned into like five books from
That's
Bigfoot.
Brilliant.
From Bigfoot to aliens to shamans to ghosts to the afterlife, and it's like I didn't even know I was writing a book when I was writing a book.
I think that's not uncommon. You know, you you write, and then you look back and you realize, oh my God, I have written the book. You know, not intentionally.
Yeah, and I'm trying to move to my next book, but I'm having some big trouble with that. Like, I seem to work better with people, and he was more, you know, we did all those books together, he edited them and stuff. It was kind of like, you know, more teamwork, and now I'm trying to write solo by myself and having discipline troubles. And I'm either going to write a book about all my personal paranormal experiences, and I also love fiction horror.
Yeah.
And one of the big people that got me into fiction horror, of course, was Stephen King. And I was just kind of curious to your perspective on him. And also, I know Lovecraft inspired him, but was there anyone else, too, that inspired him on any level that you know of?
Lovecraft, but there is, I want to, you know, I rushed into this room and I don't have a copy of the book with me. Do you have a copy of the book there?
There it is right here. Probably
take a look. There is a chapter on art. There's a story from Arthur Machen. The way this book is formatted is I wrote the introduction and then there are 18 stories and I wrote a little introduction to each of the stories. There is a story from Arthur Machen, and I think I said something about Stephen King in that introduction. I believe it's Arthur Machen, because there is Lovecraft described the Big Four, the four finest exponents of weird fiction, and Arthur Machen, and there's an author called Lord Dunsany. Oh, I have a little story in there from him. And various people who were really masters of the craft, Algernon Blackwood. And I would say that Stephen King is, you know, Stephen King is a very...
Here's a quote. I found one from him.
Yeah?
Stephen King has called Mankins' novella The Great God Pan maybe the best in the English language.
Yeah. That's, if people haven't read Arthur Machen or Algernon Blackwood, you should. They are brilliant authors. And the work holds up. Even though they're old, it doesn't read old. It reads like it could be written now. You know, other than the grammar and, you know, little details, the work really holds up, and it's authentic and vital, you know, now, you know, sometimes, you know, close to 100 years after they were first published.
I need to read The Great God Pan. I haven't yet. Someone gave it to me in a short story collection.
Yeah.
Read it. I'm a Capricorn, so I got a Pan thing going on. You would think I would have read it by now.
Oh, wow.
Here it is, Pan situations here.
Yeah. Yeah.
How'd you go about picking some of the writers that are just your favorites, and you put them in the book, and you're doing
I was given the title. I was given the title Fantastic and Forgotten. And this is actually the second book in the volume, in the series. The first one was The Wiser Book of Horror and the Occult, and that one was curated by Lon Milet Ducat. And so he got to the stories that I might have wanted to put into this book, but he got to it first. There were stories that, you know, it had to be fantastic, and because it's the forgotten, it can't be just the most obvious stories. You know, it can't be the same five stories that every time you look at Lovecraft, you know, you get the same one. So, I mean, some of them are the stories I really, really liked. Some of them I came in, like, I knew I wanted to have a Marie Corelli story. Marie Corelli, in her time, she was the J.K. Rowling of her time, Danielle Steele, you know, she was a huge best-selling author. She sold more books in her time when she was alive than Arthur Conan Doyle. She was Queen Victoria's favorite writer. Winston Churchill read her. Real, real popular bestseller. It is as if we were talking that in 100 years people wouldn't remember Anne Rice or Stephen King, because very few people remember Marie Corelli. Most of her books are out of print. But when I was a child, it's probably the first esoteric novel. I learned to read very young, and I read whatever we had on our shelves. And Marie Corelli's specialty is sort of romantic, supernaturally themed. They're sort of supernaturally themed romances, and it was the first reincarnation novel I ever read, and it takes place in simultaneously in, well, I mean, not modern Egypt, but it was the sort of the Egypt of pre-World War I, colonial Egypt, and then going back into, you know, there's that reincarnation theme, so they go back, you know, thousands of years to the ages of the pharaohs, and it made a tremendous impression on me. And so there is a Marie Corelli story, another love story. This one is a ghost story rather than a reincarnation story. And so I knew I wanted to have a Marie Corelli story in there. I love, there's that Algernon Blackwood ghost story. It's called A Woman's Ghost Story. And I love that story. It's just, it's a very different take on ghost hunting. And I wanted to include that. And then I also knew, you know, if you are, you know, there's a practical aspect to writing books. You can't, you know, I used to be a disc jockey. And, you know, you can't only, a radio disc jockey, and you can't only play your favorites. You know, you can't only play obscure songs because people lose patience with you. And they tune off. And so we had to have some, you know, some things that would make people want to read. Because, you know, I'm talking about Marie Corelli, and other people are rolling their eyes like, you know, who is that? So we have a Bram Stoker. There was a chapter. It was a chapter that was left out, that was originally intended to be in the Dracula novel, but was removed. And after Bram Stoker's death, his widow, seeking funds, published it. And it stands alone as a story. You don't have to have read Dracula. Hypothetically, the main character is Jonathan Harker, but it doesn't have to be. And so we put that in there. The Monkey's Paw, because I'm shocked by how few people have read it. I was talking to people, and people don't realize The Monkey's Paw was a short story. They think it's an old legend. But in fact, it was, you know, it was a published story that somebody created. And so those are sort of the two anchors.
What can you tell us about Algernon Blackwood? Because I've been, someone told me to read him too before. His name just sounds like a wizard.
I know. And, you know, some of these authors were Blackwood, Machen, you know, these were William Butler Yeats, members of the Golden Dawn. They were esotericists, some of them. And it's a nice balance because, you know, you have Lovecraft who insisted that he didn't believe in anything he wrote. He was just spinning tales, and you have all these feuds between his modern devotees, those who insist he was just telling stories. And, you know, there's no basis in anything. He was a materialist, and it's just fiction. And then you have other people who think that he was actually, whether or not he knew, and that's another debate, that he was actually channeling shamanic information. And, you know, you have the whole mythos of Cthulhu and, you know, the elder gods. And you know, is it real? Is it real or is it fiction? So that's always interesting.
Definitely happened in the there, no doubt about it. Happening pathers.
Yeah. And of course, some of his information came from dreams. And so, you know, I guess then you get into, you know, what is the nature of dreams?
Algernon Blackwood, where is he from? Is he British or American?
He's British. No, he was British.
Okay. I don't
know. He is British.
If you have the
advantage on me because you have the book in front of you. So if you look at the intro to each story, it does tell you a little bit about their lives. He was an interesting guy, Blackwood. Blackwood did a lot of traveling, and he was a very knowledgeable person, and he writes beautifully.
Well, let's get Jay in here for a bit, and then we'll go on break at the top of the hour. Jay?
I'll go grab the book.
Yeah, we're going to go on break about 20 minutes. We're not, okay. Yeah. What time is it? 41, 10? Yeah, about 20 minutes we'll go on break for 8 minutes. But we got Jay, she's grabbing the book. So, Jay,
oh, no, I can wait for the break.
Okay, okay. We'll go,
you, I mean,
yeah, you can move around and talk.
I can't. I'm on a landline. I it's a corded landline. I can't move around and talk.
Oh, okay.
I can only, I mean, I have to get off the phone, so.
Well, if you need anything in particular, just let me have the book right here, and then you can grab it on break. Well,
great.
Let's get Jay in here so I can catch my breath. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Hey, so having seen and gone through all these different authors and their weird creatures and animals and monsters, have you noticed any like centaur-type creatures, monsters, that the same theme that runs through all of them? Like, you get them in the Greek mythos and the Roman mythos, they're almost exactly the same. It's slightly different stories, but same characters with different names. What kind of creatures have you seen as a theme that runs across them all, if any?
Well, ghosts. I mean, I don't know if that's what you mean, but... Well, I mean,
no,
you
no,
know...
That's-
The, I mean, the Greeks and the Romans, there's a reason for that, because the Greeks had colonies in what is now Italy, and they brought their mythology with them, and it evolved. But, I mean, for me, you know those beings are, you know, the sacred beings are real. You know, my Encyclopedia of Spirits, I give you practical information on how to work with different deities, different spirits. Just, I mean, that's, you know, I think... You know, if Odin introduces himself to you, it's Odin, regardless of where he's introducing him. You know, are you in America? Are you in Scandinavia? Are you, you know, wherever, Thailand? I mean, I think Odin can travel. Ghosts. I think ghosts are the most prevalent. Ghosts are, you know, the one constant. You know, I think that wherever you go around the world, everybody knows a ghost story. Just that human experience. And I think, you know, the concept of... There are a lot of common concepts. They don't always show up in fiction, especially... Fiction tends to... I mean, in terms of English language, sort of common obsessions, it's ghosts. You know, creatures like, you know, various kinds of dragons. You know, you find those all over the world.
Yeah.
In variations, it doesn't matter where you are, you will find something that resembles a dragon. But it's harder to find in this kind of fiction. That tends to, then you get into the sort of fantasy fiction with dragons.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, H.P. Lovecraft especially, he's got some weird creatures. I mean,
and
Jeff was earlier before the show started fun of me because he likes to, because I play D&D or used to. And, most of my monster experience is from playing that game, so I mean, I haven't really read all the classical novels about them, but it seems that there are certain themes, and it's interesting you brought up ghosts, because I would not have thought that. I would have brought up something else like dragon or, you know, something that most common, vampire even, but ghosts is a unique and excellent answer.
I think people are embarrassed by a lot of, you know, these stories, the stories in my book, in this particular collection, they're not told as if they're fantasy stories. They are told, I mean, and there are, you know, there is a vampire story in there, and there are certainly some odd witch stories. So, you know, it's not only ghost stories. But when you get into things like dragons and even vampires, I think people... get embarrassed about talking about it, you know? They have a hard time telling a straight story, you know, where they're not... You know, these ghost stories are realistic ghost stories, if that makes sense. These stories are... They're not pretending... At the end of the story, they don't tell you the ghost wasn't real. You know, it was only a dream. These stories are told in a landscape... where ghosts exist. And I think that people are comfortable talking about that. Over the years, I mean, a lot of people have told me ghost encounters, angel encounters too. You know, I'm a card reader, and I used to work on a hotline, and people aren't embarrassed to tell you things. You know, people will tell a card reader something they won't even tell their therapist because they don't want to seem irrational or superstitious or foolish. But you can tell, you know, but basically a card reader is kind of the bottom of the bin. You can tell a card reader anything. Like, you know, who am I to mock them? I'm reading cards. So you hear a lot of stories. And I think that's why in fiction, that ability to tell a story with that sort of straight face and not be embarrassed about your theme and not have to pretend that it's not, you know, it's not happening in our world. You don't have to create a fantasy world. You don't have to create another dimension. It's just, you know, in this genre. I mean, and you will get, my son, you know, loves dragons. And as a child, it was a real problem because we would look for stories with dragons. It is super hard to find a story with dragons where the dragon doesn't die.
No.
and we couldn't read those, you know, because we like dragons. So, I mean, it was, you know, halfway through the book, you know, I'm reading to a six-year-old boy, and, you know, you realize this is going the wrong way, you know. So that's a hard genre of fiction to find sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah, with the dragons and they're always dying, they don't always seem to come out very good. And I think the only one that was any good and positive was Peach Dragon, but mm-hmm. they redid it. I haven't seen the redo yet, so I hope they didn't ruin it.
Yeah.
But still, throughout all the books, even, you know, the religious texts and so on, they still talk about the various, you know, mythical creatures, centaurs and Shidu and Lamassus and other. You see, I mean, we see the artwork of these creatures throughout all of the cultures, and we haven't verified any of those creatures that they exist. So if these creatures exist, I mean, there's stories of hundreds of, you know, centaurs going to war with humans against gods and then they all dying, and where are the bones? You would think we would have found, you know, fossil evidence of such creatures if they were real, but the stories sometimes try to tell them also as they're real, especially the Greek and Roman. They don't think these are fake stories. They believe every word of those books back, you know, thousands of years.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's a good question.
The only theory I have is if they're real, if you give them credence and all the monsters and things are real and all the stories of war, of gods and wars and humans fighting gods all throughout history, if they're not, we haven't found the bones on the planet, then they're probably not on the planet.
Well, it's also not necessarily in the, you know, the question is that, you know, are there different dimensions? Because they exist in a, you know, in a different dimension than in, you know, in terms of a, you know, people who journey shamanically. You know, you go places. It can be real without being here. And, you know, that concept of going from realm to realm, you know, when you communicate with the dead, you know, where are they? You know, sometimes they're here, but sometimes they're not. So you can, you know, or, you know, these extraterrestrials, you know, I don't know, you know, these are big questions.
And the ultimate evidence to quantum realms being all around us is the fact that we all die, and there's a part of you that hopefully lives forever that was somewhere before it came here, and then it came here, and then when you die, it's going to go back. So just, that's like with people who, you know, in paranormal, people into Bigfoot and stuff, like I've wrote a book about Bigfoot, but there are some people who, if they hear anything paranormal about Bigfoot, they'll attack you. I've had people stalk me and threaten to beat me because I think Bigfoot's paranormal. But then I tell them the ultimate evidence is death. They don't choose, you're going to die. And what's going to happen to you when you die? You're obviously, if you believe you continue on, are going to be thrust into a quantum paranormal realm. So, you know, why don't you believe in, you know, multidimensional stuff, et cetera, et cetera?
Plus, I think it's also about the possibilities. You know, it's not always what is, but what might be, what could be. You know, because we don't necessarily know, you know. You know, maybe at this point in our lives, you know, here in this dimension, we may not know but that possibility. I mean, it's one of the things I like with some of those stories is the opening of possibilities and making you think about what's possible. You know, what are the options? What are, you know? Just to make you think and open your mind.
Definitely. And you mentioned shamanic realm. We've had a lot of shamans on, and in March, Jose Stevens is coming on. Looking
mm-hmm.
forward to that. Sounds true. I try to get shamans on all the time. We've had Serge Cahali King on. I could go on and on.
Oh, yeah.
Some great interviews there when you get them on here. No doubt about it.
Well, I mean, you know, you get to these really big existentialist questions of what is reality? You know, and is reality more complex than we generally allow it to be or consider it to be? So, you know.
Well, as far as the show, I mean, the reason I do it is because, when I was 17, I went through testicular cancer and went through chemo and had kind of an awakening, a shamanic death of sorts. And
right.
And my father died shortly after that, and I attract paranormal events, from UFOs to multiple witnesses seeing UFOs over my home.
Yeah.
Every house I move to, it follows me. I've had friends look at me and say, Jeffrey, you're attracting this here. It's because you're attracting it here. And then many times I've seen different sorts of beings. I've seen beings made out of light many times.
Yeah.
Many times. And that's why I do the show, because I saw a bunch of weird stuff. So.
Well, yeah, I guess me too, because I saw weird things as a kid, and it, you know, so it stopped. It wasn't just stories, you know, it was something that had a reality to me. But I think that there are a lot of people who see things and hear things and have experiences and attract, and most people don't talk about it. Or they, you know, and I mean, I have this experience over and over again, over years, where I'm invited to teach someplace or to speak someplace, and, it, you know, it's in a room full of people, and, you know, and there's the one heckler. There's the one person who just, you know, insists on arguing with you, and, you know, why are they there? But they're, you know, they're arguing with you, and they're, you know, questioning you, and they're giving you a hard time, or giving the other people in the room a hard time. And then at some point, you know, there's a break, and I get up and I go into the bathroom, or just as I'm leaving, the same person kind of sneaks in there and says, can I tell you something I've never told anybody else before? And they have the most amazing paranormal story. And, I've learned the people who are sort of in the biggest, you know, the people who pretend to, be totally in denial of this are the ones who really have an amazing story that they just are, for whatever reason, and there are a lot of reasons. There are many reasons why people don't share these stories. So I'm not criticizing the not sharing of the stories, because, you know, I get it. I wasn't joking when I say people tell me something, because, you know, if you're a card reader, they can tell you anything, because, you know, you sort of lack a certain credibility at that point. People can tell you anything because nobody will ever believe you. But there's a lot, you know. There's a lot of stuff out there, and a lot of people with stories. And if all those people actually came forward and started telling their stories, it would rewrite how we see the world, or how we acknowledge the world to be.
I definitely believe that. For sure, and now as far as my experiences, I can't shut up about them. That's before the show, I didn't think I could do a radio show because I didn't like to talk that much, but now everybody tells me I can't shut up, so.
It's important. I mean, I think it's important to talk about it.
Domino effect.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with my girlfriend today, Lauren, and I was telling her how after chemo, I came back to school and everybody called me a vampire because I was pale. And it was interesting because during chemo, I had testicular cancer and it spread to my stomach and lungs, and I could have died. I had to go through chemo.
Mm-hmm.
But I read a lot of comic books and Anne Rice books, and I really latched onto that stuff. And on some level, I think I escaped into the Anne Rice book a little too much. When I came back to school, everybody was like, vampire, vampire. So, but she was sharing another story where some gypsy lady called her a Strigoi, and I told her what that meant. And we're like, why are people calling us vampires? We don't drink blood. Are we vampires? But it was just funny. I've always been pale, and she's pale too, so I guess it's just that's people call pale people that in the South, since we're from, you know, Georgia and Florida.
Yeah.
We're X-Men mutants down here. But we're going to be going on break very shortly, and then I'll let Jay lead in on that, and then I'll take over. But what's your website? Do you have a website?
My name.com. It's judicaillis.com. www.judikaillis.com.
Nice. And Lon's been on about his compilation book, too. We had him on.
That's a great book, too.
Yeah, definitely. So there's going to be, we have the fairy book, Varla. She's coming on.
Varla,
She's a blast, too.
I'm lucky because I get sneak previews of all the books. You know, I see them in production, so that's a really fun book.
Nice. All right, we're about to go on break. You're listening to United Public Radio 107.7 FM New Orleans, and it's a lunar eclipse, full moon, snow moon night as the comet runs hither through the universe, the green comet Honda. I just put up an article that says something about it's all over liberal NBC news. And that Russia's going to give Snowden to Trump, possibly. It could be bunk, but they're all.
I saw that.
That'd be pretty messed up if they didn't have. Nothing would surprise me. I still need to watch that Oliver Stone movie. I haven't gotten around to it. Well, we're going on break now. We'll be back in about 8 minutes. Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll be right back. All right, Joe. Break. Said something weird about not talking there. Welcome back to the Church of Mavis Radio Show. It's Friday night, and we're going to, let me see who's, read off some guests that are coming up. Next week, Saul Luckman on DNA. Going to get some light beam discussion, but I told him about my light beam situation, and I found art that he grew because he's seen light beams. So we're going to get on that for sure. Got another light beam witness, Stanley Krippner, Rolling Thunder Medicine Man, March 3rd, Jeffrey Mishlove, PK Man, story of Ted Owens. Joe probably knows the Ted Owens story about the UFO guy that could do all kinds of weird prophetic stuff and claimed aliens gave him powers. Ted Owens, Jeffrey Mishlove wrote the book PK Man about that weird story. It's a pretty strange story, so we're going to get into it. Jose Stevens, Shamanism. He was one of the first shamans I ever came across, book-wise, Secrets of Shamanism. So I'm really excited about that. March 17th, Stephen Gray, Cannabis Spirituality. Of course I'm excited about that. March 24th, Chuck Blackmon, Navy shipbuilder. It's kind of a private indie kind of a UFO alien abductee story, so I don't think he's done much radio, if not at all. March 31st, Richard Kaczynski, got some Aleister Crowley, and he's wrote all kinds of books. Going to get into that. April 7th, Joe R. Lansdale, Weird Fiction, Happen Leonard. All right, April 14th, Varla Ventura, a fairy book coming out. April 21st, Evan Strong and Stephen Strong from Australia, Ancient Aliens, Aboriginals. That's going to be a lot of fun. April 28th, Nick Sullivan, Zombie Bigfoot. And that's right, Zombie Bigfoot, baby. But no, he's actually Nick Sullivan's an actor, and he's been on Boardwalk Empire and the Affair show on Showtime, and he wrote a Zombie Bigfoot book.
Wow.
So, gonna be weird, man. That's how we roll. Roll with the weird. Follow your weird. You're listening to United Public Radio 107.7 FM New Orleans. And we're back with Judica with her book, the Fantastic and the Wiser Book of the Fantastic and Forgotten, Tales of the Supernatural, Strange and Bizarre, from Wiser Books. And always check out Wiser Books. They have many unique titles that, more so than most other publishers, you can find some really unique gems in there. And their website's Red Will Wiser. That's Red Will, WEISER.com. So check it out. Lots of great titles. You got me hyped for the sequel to this book, Judica, and then that North book. When's the North book expected to be out?
Both books will be out in the fall. They'll be out in the fall of this year. So I think it's too soon for pre-orders, but in a couple months they'll be. You'll see them online already. I'm excited too. We've had some great books coming up in the fall.
Very unique titles. That's why I like your company. It's very eclectic.
Eclectic is us.
Very peculiar.
We have this wonderful book from Diana Paxson. We've got Starcast. This is a great Conjure book coming up.
What's it called? Starcast?
The author, her name is Star. Starcast, that's Mama Star. And she's got a book called Old Style Conjure that will also be out in the fall, and it's wonderful.
Nice. Check those out for sure. I love when I'm scheduling up, keep those in mind for sure.
She's fun. I mean, you would like talking with her. She's a lot of fun. She's very interesting. She's a very direct speaker. She's a person with, I like people who are willing to talk about their experiences, who talk about their lives, and they're real. People who are authentic and genuine.
What's her name again? Star.
Star. Star Casas, CASAS.
Okay.
And I think that book will be out August, September, something like that.
Okay. You spoke about having experiences when you were younger. Did you have some sort of shamanic death or something that happened, a tragedy that propelled you into your...
Oh, my God. I was an accident. My nearest sibling is 12 years older than I am, so I was a happy accident, but I was an accident, and I was the only child in a family of, people with very hard lives, and so, I mean, I've seen ghosts all my life, I see them now, I saw them as a child, so I mean, to me, that's just, there's that saying, every house is a haunted house, so I always see them. And, I mean, I've certainly had my own, all sorts of experiences, but ghosts. I mean, if I had a different life, I've always, I was joking with you before, I said I'm a very responsible person, but I am. And, if I had a different life, I would have been a really, really good medium. But, in order to do that full time, you can't be editing manuscripts and running to the supermarket. And, I took care of my parents and I took care of my children and I've always had a lot of mundane responsibilities, practical responsibilities. But if I didn't have them, because in these once upon a time, society supported their shamans and their mediums and their oracles, and so you didn't have to worry about how you were going to pay your bills or, you got to go pay your taxes, you got to do this, you got to, you can just relax and focus on. Focus on those esoteric practices that you can't necessarily just turn on or turn off. I am a card reader. It's what I love to do the best. If I could do nothing but read cards, I probably, what you were talking about before with your book, and I was thinking, if I didn't have a deadline, I would never finish anything. I like to write and I play with stuff, but it's a deadline. It's a deadline that makes me. I'm not paid to write books. I'm paid to finish books, and it's the deadline. I wrote off the top of my head, I think, because I have a little bit of a complicated publishing history. I have books that went out of print and were brought back. and the publishers retitled them, but I have about 8 nonfiction books. So this Weiser Book of the Fantastic and Forgotten, I tell people I have a new book and they're expecting another encyclopedia, and I have books in the works. I have books on the way, but I'm not sure that this was necessarily what people were expecting from me. But I really do love this fiction, and there's a lot of truth in this fiction. And I know these ghost stories because I myself have my own ghost stories. So I know that these are authentic in their way, even if they are fiction.
Definitely, and those encyclopedia books, they look huge. Are they that really as big as that? The pictures on
yeah.
them? They look like phone books.
They are. They are. They were. You know, they weren't. The first one wasn't supposed to be, but it kind of took on a life of its own. For people who are unfamiliar, Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells is over 1,000 pages, and it's a hard book to ship economically because it's so heavy, and it's always been a problem for the publishers. There was a point where Amazon, they will now, but the original edition, they wouldn't ship it for free. If you have the people who have the original editions of that book, it was a 5-pound book, and they've played with it over the years and managed to get it lighter. You know, the covers are lighter, and it's the same book. It's nothing has been removed, but they are able to ship it for less. So that's a 1,000-page book. Encyclopedia of Witchcraft is about, I think, 800 pages. Encyclopedia of Spirits, I don't even remember. Maybe also someplace between 800 and 1,000.
Wow, that's a serious paper.
Well, they're encyclopedic. and they take a while to write. I wrote 4 encyclopedias and 2 field guides, just one after another. You know, it was like, you know, I've done my genealogy also, and you look at, you know, my ancestors, these women who, you know, 100 years ago, you know, they were having, like, you know, they gave birth every year from the time they were, like, 20 until they dropped dead at 45, you know, just literally a baby every year. But that's how I was writing those books, like, and I was exhausted, and I needed to take a break from it. So I am working my way back to another encyclopedia.
Nice. You're a machine pumping things out. My problem right now is just discipline. And plus, I have a job where I put up articles all the time, so it's like I'm already
right.
typing all the time. So it's like I got to make that niche of time, you know, so I'll start doing my book. And my hands already hurt from what I'm doing, you know, with my job.
Yeah.
So then I have, like, a second job writing the book.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a discipline issue for me right now that I'm trying to work out. You said you've seen ghosts before. I've seen American Indian ghosts before in full attire back in my younger party days when I was partying. And that's all I'll say, just partying. And one thing that I see a lot now, like I said, are light beings. After my dad died, I had one up here in the cloud tops, and my friend saw it with me.
And what do they look like?
Like completely a person, but glowing like light, like golden light. And you can't really, I didn't see any features like, you know, face or anything. It was just kind of weird, like a person made out of golden light with arms and legs.
And can you see them, or is the light so bright that it hurts your eyes?
I can see them.
You can see them.
I saw several years ago, I saw 2 leave this house. Something told me to go outside and look, and I looked up, and I saw 2 beings of light, like they came out of my house through the roof and were leaving my house and flying into the heavens.
Wow.
And I've seen about 4 or 5 times, and we've had a shaman on from Peru, and he says I'm right about what I think they are, which is us without our bodies. And he went into something about in Peru they gather in crowds and watch the shining ones in the sky, and they're us in the future. And he went into a strange thing about it, but that's the big one that I see a lot, and that's the one I can't
tell you
about. And one of the reasons why I think I have the experience is because when I was 17, when I went through chemo,
right.
I said a prayer to heal and to be a superhero, and I was in the comics, and something said, okay, we're going to show
I love comics.
We're going to show
yeah.
you around a little bit.
Well, I think, though, that is the shamanic, where you are to come close to death, you know? Because that is a shamanic experience. And I mean, for people who are not familiar, my book, Encyclopedia of Witchcraft, I do discuss these things. But that to come that close to death and to see your own mortality, you know, it's you know, that's a very profound experience. And it does, you know, it opens that eye. And then you start to, because the world is, the world is a complicated place, and natural is more complicated than we sometimes, you know, let it be, you know, or that we acknowledge it as being.
Well, my next book, I'm trying to center around all the light being situations and my story, but I think what I saw was just something. I think I was shown it to make me comfortable with the death process, because I've always been, like, terrified and have phobias of it, which I still have. And I think it would be a lot worse if I hadn't seen, you know, these light beings, of course, because now I think that's what, you know, we are. We're light, and I jokingly say we're gas bag aliens.
Yeah. I've seen,
but,
you know, various relatives, you know, or people who I was close to. You know, I'm a good dreamer, and I mean, they do come back and talk to me in my dreams. So I've always felt that, which is... You know, and they look good, and they're, you know, they're articulate and they look good, and I think it fosters a sense of peacefulness, because I feel that there is an afterlife, and it's okay, you know.
Definitely. So when you saw your ghost when you were younger, when you see him, it's strange that they're always wearing like the same clothes from the time period. Like people say they see a Civil War ghost. Once a lady told me she saw a pioneer ghost, a woman standing in her living room dressed like a pioneer woman. So I always just contemplate the clothes thing, how weird that is with ghosts when you see them in these clothes.
Well, that is the story, you know, with vampires, if you believe in vampires, that, you know, you can tell them. Well, because you can tell them because they're still walking around in the clothes that were fashionable when they were alive, or... You know, so they don't dress like, you know, as if they're in our time. They're somehow anachronistic. It's also the clothes that tip you off.
I'm excited to learn that Anne Rice is making a Vampire Chronicles show, and it's probably going to be on a big cable network.
That's great.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. It better not be on CW. That's all I know. It better be on HBO Showtime or something.
Oh, I like Netflix. I like Netflix because I like to binge watch. So I like when they put them all up and you can just watch them all at once.
Netflix has been really good with the Daredevil and Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Just watched Santa Clarita Diet. That was really good. It's gory, but it was funny.
I love Luke Cage.
Do you know what? Have you heard of Santa Clarita Diet?
No. I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Well, I don't know. I'll explain it to you. It may not be your thing. It upset a lot of. Not that I'm saying you're a housewife, but a lot of housewives got upset at Drew Barrymore for it. Basically, it's got Drew Barrymore and Timothy Oliphant, and. A cannibal vampire weird zombie storyline, and it's like a 30-minute show, 10 episodes, and it's like, I would compare it to like Ash versus Evil Dead or something like that, but
mm-hmm.
not as zany as that, but definitely horror comedy, but it's good, but there's gore, they're cannibals, and you're trying to figure out if she's a vampire or a zombie and how she got that way. She does a good job in it, but it's definitely horror comedy, no doubt about it. That's fun. That was a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to Iron Fist. I just saw the trailer for that.
Yeah, and Netflix is nailing it with the
yeah.
superhero Nails. Luke Cage was really good. I loved them all.
I love Luke Cage, yeah. Yeah, Jessica Jones. Yeah. Well, I love comics. You know, I love comics, and I just thought that they really, you know, they really got the essence of Luke Cage. You know, they got the character right.
There's a new show that you need to definitely see if you like comic book shows that just started on FX, Legion. And it's
I saw it. I know. That was really interesting.
That was amazing.
Yeah. I did. No. I know. I wish that was on Netflix because I'd like to see all of the episodes. I wanted the next one.
And the thing about that, that's by the guy that did, he did the Fargo show, with the TV show that was really good and won a lot of awards with Billy Bob Thornton. That was actually one of the first things. They change the storyline every season, but that first season with Billy Bob Thornton as the Devil Hitman was amazing.
I've been watching Riverdale, which is, you know, you know, sort of a very adult Archie and Veronica and Betty.
What is that? Is that CW or something? What is that?
I don't know.
I'll have to check it out.
I have to tell you, I can't even, you know, I'm old, you know, I'm nostalgic for my old, like the box TV that you just turned on and off. I am, you know, we've got so many remote controls, I can barely, I don't even know what's on what. I get my kids to put the stuff on for me.
I have a DVR and I have OCD problems with it. I have to, like, take shit off the lead and after a while. Like, I get, there's so many on there, I can't keep up and I have to do a purge.
Uh-huh.
Well, let's give Jay some time here. Jay, what's the take over the reins here, and then we'll keep on trucking here.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Before the break, you mentioned that you wish more people would report their paranormal and bizarre stories and such like that. And I agree with you. I wish more people would do that. You know, I absolutely believe in alien beings and other species live in this galaxy. I mean, it's mathematically impossible that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, we haven't found any evidence, bones and what have you, allegedly anyways. But so what kind of stories do you think, or are you hearing? I mean, but I know ghosts are in there and Bigfoot type things, but are people seeing, like, either centaurs and other, you know, creatures of myth and legend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not so much. You know, I don't hear a lot of centaurs, but I, you know, it's sort of if you hear other things, then why not centaurs? Dragons, sphinxes, griffins. Griffins are big. You know. I mean, people. You know, a lot of people, you know, snake spirits, a lot of these sort of serpentine creatures, there's these sort of hybrid people have these experiences, and it's, are all these people sane? Maybe not. I've been a counselor too, so, you know, there's certainly, you know, there's this, big, you know, there are plenty of people who are mentally ill who are not seeing anything, and plenty of sane people who are seeing and hearing, and it's interesting. I think it's just that people are very quick to deny their experiences or to rationalize their experiences. I hear a lot of angel stories, or what are interpreted as angel stories. The classic story, I was, you know, my car broke down, I was alone on the road, somebody showed up and helped me, and then I turned around to thank them and they were gone, and there was no way they could have disappeared without my seeing them leave, and yet they were gone. I get a lot of, you know, on a professional level, I get a lot of, you know, people will call, make an appointment, and they'll tell you their experiences. I want to tell you this happened to me. And then their question is, you know, do I think they're crazy? Because they're not sure. They're not sure if they're crazy. And so that's something, I mean, for years and years, I mean, if you have these situations, I don't know, you know, Do I know if you're crazy? No. But I can tell you that a lot of people, men, women, old, young, different colors, different religions, you know, different parts of the country, different parts of the world, people are having similar experiences.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's interesting that you brought up the stranger on the side of the road stories, because those, there are a lot of those. And I find those to be, you know, is probably as valid as probably UFO testimony. The people absolutely believe this, and it can go both ways. Sometimes it goes bad for them because the person that they that comes to help them that doesn't help them. But it also can take different forms. Like it's a, sometimes it's a man or an angel or even ghosts. And in some cases,
well,
even
typically they don't. It's not that they don't. The, whatever this being is, you know, and maybe it's just a person who moves really fast.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like someone comes with wings and, oh, my God, there's an angel. It's that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, someone who looks like a person, and, of course, in the Bible, you know, when Abraham greets the angels, he doesn't realize they're angels. They look like travelers. So someone comes and, you know, fixes their car or rescues them from the fire or saves them from this, you know, some terrible fate, and then vanishes. And until they vanish, there is no sense that this is anything supernatural, except, you know, there are no footprints or the footprints disappear, you know, there's three steps and then they're gone. And just the unbelievable quality of the situation is what makes them think it's, you know, it must be an angel. Vanishing hitchhikers too. That's something that I hear a lot. You know, somebody was in the car, you know, a cab driver or, you know, somebody who, you share a car with somebody and, you know, they're in the car. You have a lot of these in Hawaii. You get a lot of the Madame Tele stories. You know, Madame Tele gets in the store. She wants you to light her cigarette. You don't have a match, and so she like just automatically, you know, out of nowhere conjures fire. So that's a story that, you know, it's told a lot by a lot of different people, and I don't believe they're all crazy.
Yeah, I mean they can't be. It's the same with the aliens and UFO testimonies. I mean, there's so many people across the globe that tell the same story. And it's...
Clearly something is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was fumbling for that word.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we don't understand exactly, you know, maybe it's not what we think it is, but something is happening.
Maybe it's a great unsolvable mystery that's part of a computer-generated matrix to keep our minds occupied as we're living in a computer-generated world.
Maybe. We're all living
in I don't know. Yeah, it sounds reasonable.
They're running the fascist program in America now, apparently.
Yeah. They've been running that for years, Jeffrey, since just after World War.
I don't think it's ever been so blatantly obvious. But let's try to stir back to the book a little bit. Who are some of the authors in here you'd like to talk about?
You know, there is a relationship to that, because you asked at the beginning when we started talking, how did I select these stories? And one of the issues is these are old stories. And, it's an issue, you know, I'm putting together another compilation now, and these stories were written at a time where, you know, the racism and the sexism and the homophobia, and, you know, it was so pervasive that one of the things I did was basically I read a lot of stories and I eliminated everything that was, that offended me. As much as I could, it limits, you know, Lovecraft. Some of those stories are horrific, you know, not a liberal guy, not a kind and compassionate guy necessarily. So there, it did eliminate a certain number of stories because I really didn't want my name on that.
Who are some of your, Jay, who's some horror authors that you like to read?
I don't really read horror so much. Most kind of stuff I used to read was like Michael Moorcock in the Eternal Soul character. So he's like Elric and this other guy, and I think even Prince Quorum's part of that entire multiverse that Moorcock invented. So it's a fantasy science fiction kind of stuff. But Michael Moorcock that was one of those great guys.
I have some of his books. I haven't gotten around to reading them. I need to read them one year.
They're pretty good, and they're short. They're like, 250, 300-page books.
Just with Lovecraft, his stories genuinely are scary. I'm a horror movie enthusiast and books and horror movies, and there's a point to where you become jaded, and it's like nothing really scares you. Seeing everything.
Did you read, did you read, in this book, did you read The Spider, the Hans Heinz Ewer story?
Yes.
I find, by the time a book comes out, I read everything out loud. And I you read it over and over again, so you become very familiar. But I remember the first time I read that story, that's a pretty horrifying story.
Definitely. And, that's the thing with Lovecraft is, there's just something about it that always affects me on some level. And you just can't shake it.
Yeah.
Like he's pulling from, hell or wherever he's pulling this stuff from. I don't know if hell would be the case.
Yeah, well, I think he was also, he was as a child, was, a little boy with frail health and scary dreams. And I think he was somebody who was very familiar with fear. He had a lot of fear.
Well, just to give you an idea of how deep we've gone with Lovecraft, Peter Lavenda's been on, and we've discussed Lovecraft with him, and he was supposedly involved in that collective, Simon, that wrote that paperback.
Yeah, yeah. Necronomicon, yeah.
Yeah, we've gotten into that paperback book. That's pretty weird, for sure.
Yeah. Right. Well, that whole concept, the elder gods, and, it's an interesting concept. And that's not necessarily, in the form, he was really an innovator in the way he wrote in terms of the form, but the concept of, gods or beings who were replaced by people and, might not have our best intentions in mind. That's an ancient concept.
It's like that movie Prometheus where they go to find the alien creator and try to kill him.
There's not a story in here that I don't like, in this book. If I didn't like it, I wasn't going to subject anybody else to it either. So I think they're all good stories. But they're all different types of stories. That spider, I really like Hans Heinz Ewers. Hans Heinz Ewers was known in his time as the German Edgar Allan Poe. He translated Poe into German, and he's best known. He was a friend of Crowley. And he's best known, he wrote a trilogy, a vampire trilogy, that is, for people who haven't read it, if you're familiar with the German, the Allround movies, that's from one of the trilogies. It's Vampire, Allround, and I don't remember the last book off the top of my head. It's German. It's German for Mandrake. Allraune, and there are three or four different versions of it, going back to silent versions to the most recent was the Hildegard Neff. And
that's by Hans Heinz Ewer.
He was the author, yeah. He was the author. And he's a great writer.
I'm going to have to pull up those horror movies. That sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Sure.
Hildegard Neffis in the most recent one. In my Encyclopedia of Witchcraft, there's a section on movies, that, you know, because Alraune in German literally means mandrake, but it's also a word for witch. And so there's a section on movies and comic books and novels having to do with witches in that book.
What's another vampire book that's really old that was around Bram Stoker's time? There's, I can't remember the name of it. There's some other weird vampire book. That's
Well, there's, you know, there's always Carmilla. There's Carmilla, which is Sheridan Le Fanu, which, you know, is before Dracula. And Varney the Vampire also before Dracula.
Yeah, that's the one, Varney the Vampire.
Yeah, Varney. Yeah, I mean, I like vampire fiction. I love the Van Rice books.
I've read every Vampire Chronicle of Van Rice.
And The Hunger, you know, The Hunger by Whitley Strieber, that's a great book.
That's really good. I just got Van Rice's new one, Lestat in the Realms of Atlantis. I haven't read it yet.
I love the Mayfair Witches, you know, the Chronicles of the Mayfair Witches, those are great books also by Anne Rice.
Yeah, I haven't read those yet, but I just got them. I need to read them at some point.
Oh, they're great. They're great. They take place in New Orleans also. You know, Merrick, that's another one from there.
Merrick, yeah, that one's really
good.
Yeah. So what else, do you have anything else to say, or were you done? I'm out of control tonight.
Who was talking about Dungeons and Dragons?
Oh, that would be me.
Because, you know, I am told Encyclopedia 5000 Spells, I get a lot of emails from people who play D&D about that book, because apparently that's a good book for the game. And I don't know how to play, so I don't know, but I get this mail, so that made me very happy.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. And I was actually going to ask you something technical about how you did all those kind of encyclopedias. So, you know, I don't know what kind of man hours you must have gone through. I mean,
I don't sleep.
Yeah, no sleep, I guess. But what's the process? How do you compile all of those? I mean, to get a book.
I love the researching, and I research all the time. Like when I'm saying that I have books in the works. I work on half a dozen books at once. I have books I've been working on for years. So when I did that first encyclopedia, 5,000 Spells, the publisher knew, because I had done an earlier book, it's called Magic When You Need It, that has 150 spells. And the publisher knew I collect spells. I had just shoeboxes full of, you know, 3x5 cards with spells, and he knew. And that's how that book started. So I had a lot of the information already. The gathering of the information, I mean, you know, all those books, I had the information for years. The actual putting together of the book, you've got to, you know, it's very architectural. You've got to structure it. And then you just, if I can see it in my head, I can write it. And you just sort of plow through it. And I have things on, you know, on cards, and then I write some of it on paper, and I do some of it on a laptop, and I go back and forth, and I I'm like a horse with blinders on. I don't answer my phone, and I fall back on my correspondence, and, you know, my kids are great cooks because my kids can do, they can cook and do the laundry and pretty much do everything because they took care of me while I was writing. And I just do it, you know, and it's the best advice I can give any writer is just do it. Like, don't think about it too much, because, you know, it's easier to fix it on paper than it is to agonize in your head. But if I didn't have a contract with a deadline, I don't think I would finish anything.
Yeah. Yeah, the added pressure, I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, I think that... If I could do it, I would probably use the same methods you do. Is it different things? Writing on paper, writing in the computer, you know, maybe even in the phone.
Yeah.
But I would absolutely have to have an actual working typewriter, you know, with the carriage that goes across, and you have to bang it across in a big...
yeah. I think I still have one. But
yeah,
it,
oh, I,
you know,
yeah,
it's harder. There's
it is harder.
I mean, you messed up. You got to, like, you know, rip out the piece of paper and, you know, it's so
it is very but it also, there's a rhythm to it because that carrot, that, you know, that clickety clack noise as it goes down, and it gets you into a rhythm. And I think that helps him get the words down.
Yeah, it's true. I miss the sound of typewriters sometimes.
Yeah, I don't think kids could appreciate them these days. I mean, they physically hurt your fingers at the end of the night when you're trying to type a research paper for high school or what have you.
I don't remember. We were watching something, and, like, you know, there was the sound of the typewriter, which if you're a certain age, it's like you can't not recognize it. But I was watching with young people, and, like, somebody went, "Oh, what's that?" And it was, it was a strange thing because, of course, if you're a certain age, you know the sound of the typewriter. It's so distinct.
Yeah, I would be surprised if someone would go, "Oh, that sounds like the keys on my cell phone."
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to ask you, if we still have time, is you mentioned you like the comic books. You know, I think Jeffrey and I both do this the same. You know, also throughout all the types of books you get, fiction, nonfiction, particularly religions, there are certain creatures with superpowers.
Yes.
And some, you know, Jeffrey mentioned the guy that UFOs gave him superpowers or what have you. Why do you think there's an inspiration for those kind of things in both fiction and nonfiction stories?
I don't know. I mean, I you know, we could look at different, you know, possibly because people, you know, because some people have maybe not exactly those powers, but there are people who, you know, I mean, I've met people. I used to work with a man who could read your mind, and I know he did because he read mine. I watched him do it to other people. So, I mean, there are people who have power, so maybe it's a reflection of that. Or maybe it's just, you know, maybe it's just a good story. Or wishful thinking. I mean, you could look at it a lot of different ways.
It could be any or all of those. I tend to think with things that are written, it's not written down unless it's something that they can describe that they've seen.
Right.
In a lot of cases, you know, so I'm thinking that there must be some, just like with the creatures and the gods, there must be some inspiration for it because it spans all cultures and all different, you know, walks of life.
I have to tell you, it's killing me because I read years ago a novel with a centaur, and it's a Brazilian novel that was translated into English, and it's got the word centaur in the title. And it's killing me because I cannot remember, because I want to tell you what this novel is. And
Brazilian centaur?
It was a book that was originally, I think, from Brazil, and then it was translated into English. And I love all these beings, and I read it, and it was very good, and I cannot remember. It's going to come to me at 4 in the morning. I'm going to remember the title.
Give me an email, and I'll
let you know. I will.
He has a centaur that lives under his stairs.
It will come to me.
We got about 4 minutes. Your next book, you think you're ever forecasting any Mary Shelley? Does she have a bunch of stories or just Frankenstein? She had more than Frankenstein, didn't she? Mary Shelley?
I don't remember. I don't know.
Yeah, for some reason, I think maybe just Frankenstein, but she had to have
it. It's a great novel. You know, it's a great novel. People, it's just, isn't it a beautiful book? It's just a wonderful book.
And the movies that spawned, if you really just look at all the...
I just watched Bride of Frankenstein, which I love.
Yeah, I've just got some rare Frankenstein movies. There's that Roger Corman with Randy Quaid, Frankenstein.
I've never seen that.
That's pretty good. It's not bad. Well, what's your website again? And we're going to close out here.
Thank you. www.judikaillies.com.
All right.
And thank you.
We appreciate it. We appreciate it. And thanks for coming on. It's been a great show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
definitely keep us in the loop. We'll have to get you on again sometime for sure. All right, everybody. You're listening to United Public Radio, 107.7 FM, New Orleans. Coming up next is Supernatural Substation. And next week we'll be talking to Saul Luckman. And he, you know, I talk about, I see these light beings all the time. I came across his Google art, and he had a, he drew a picture of a light being, because he said he saw them too. And I was like, wow, he saw a light being too. So we're going to get into that with him and get into some DNA. We're going to get into Jay's DNA. Get a blood test before next week's show, so we know your DNA. But anywho, at the end of the month is Stanley Krippner about Bowling Thunder Medicine Man, a great shaman. He's passed away now, but his son and Stanley Krippner wrote this book about Rolling Thunder Medicine Man, so we're going to get into that pretty heavily. Let me see. You're listening to United Public Radio, 107.7 FM, New Orleans. And we'll see you next Friday. Everybody have a good weekend, and watch out for that JoJo, especially on full moons when there's a big green comet going through the sky, because JoJo will wrap you in a cocoon and take you to the swamp. Good night, everybody.
It's the zombie apocalypse.
That's right. If it's going to happen, it needs to happen right now. All right. Good night. Is it over?